So one of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this over the Gonderdyland Rock. Saints, they all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
Singer and actress Beyonce Knowles is getting a break at the airport, but she's not alone. The Homeland Security chairman is telling the TSA to stop patting her down when she passes through airport security. Take a listen to his reasoning.
There are certain people that are just so well known that you just got to use common sense, because if you start patting them down, people are going to say, they're patting down Beyonce. I mean, that, she's not going to blow a plane up.
He also said people like Donald Rumsfeld and Henry Kissinger should get free passes as well. So what do you think? Should well-known celebrities be given a free pass?
We passing through the night. He picked me up. We made me feel so lucky. Seven, he kissed me in his six, we be making love. And five, still the one. I told it. I'm trying to make us free from that. Two, still the one.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide. It's a suicide.
If there is a heaven, I hope they hold a special place for people like me. Not hot, but you know, just a little warmer. Where I'm not forced to sing the same songs over and over again a million times. Where I'm not expected to listen to people give long sermons that are not profound. Where I don't have to hear hypocrites tell me not to do the same things that they do themselves. Where I don't have to re-meet everyone I've already met on earth like some high school reunion that never ends. Where I don't have to talk to beings with giant wings and act like I think that's cool or fashion forward. And since we're on the subject, I don't know how I feel about halos. Because I've always felt that light should shine from the inside out. So if there is a heaven, I hope they hold a special place for people like me. Not hot, but you know, just a little warmer. Where I'm not expected to float around aimlessly like I had some type of frontal lobotomy. Where I'm not expected to smile and laugh all day like I'm trying to OD on magic mushrooms. Where my entire existence isn't planned out like when to talk, when to sleep, when to pray, like I'm sentenced to some eternal penitentiary. I just want to be free. And I've always been confused, because if God made us individuals, then how does what constitutes heaven for me also constitute what's heaven for you? I mean, you might want to fly around and play a harp and things, or explore the countryside, meet new souls and play games. But me, I just want my aura to increase. And when I return to the essence, I want to rest in peace. So, if there is a heaven, I hope there's a special place for people like me. Not hot, but you know, just a little warmer. Because when it's over, what I want most is that sweet release. And what I want most for you is just an eternity of whatever you would consider to be peace.
Deep peace of the running waves to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the smiling stars to you. Deep peace of the quiet earth to you. Deep peace of the watching shepherds to you. Deep peace of the Son of Peace to you.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
I would like to tell you a history story. One that is not written in the history books, nor is it being taught in the classrooms. But I think you will agree that it should be. It was long, long ago, in the days of our ancestors, there lived a man named Daganoweda, an Oneida holy man. And at that time, there were five nations living in the area. They were the Seneca, the Mohawk, the Onondaga, the Cayuga, and the Oneida. And these nations were always fighting with each other. Many wars were being fought. Many lives were being lost. This greatly troubled Daganoweda. And he thought, there must be a way to devise a system by which these nations could live together in peace. a secure and lasting peace. He thought and thought about this until he hit upon a plan, one he called the Great Plan of Peace. Then he began to travel among these nations, speaking with the people, sitting in council explaining his plan, forging alliances. The alliance was such that each tribe would maintain control over their own affairs, but they would come under a much larger treaty, one that stated, should anyone attack any one of these tribes, they would be attacking all of them. All major decisions would be made by the five nations sitting in council. The day-to-day decisions would be left to the individual tribes. And it was the women who would elect the men to council. This was part of the rule. And if the men did not do the job, the women would vote them out. And so these five nations came together and met at a place not far from what is today Syracuse, New York. And at that first meeting, over 50 chiefs gathered under a symbolic tree of peace and declared, "This is our alliance, and it is good." They became known as the Iroquois Confederacy, but they called themselves the Haudenosaunee, the people of the Longhouse. Now, many years later, Benjamin Franklin had heard of this alliance, and at that time, the colonies were looking for a system by which they could work together. The problem was that each one of the colonies wanted to be in charge, but they knew they would have to come together to protect themselves from England. So in 1765, they met at the New Albany Convention, and Benjamin Franklin invited the Iroquois people to come to this convention to explain how their system worked. And they did. And the colonial representatives liked this system. And so that great plan of peace that Daganoweda started and brought democracy to this land 300 years before Columbus became the foundation for what is today the Constitution of the United States of America. In 1987, Senator Daniel Inouye brought this before the combined Houses of Congress, and it is now written in the congressional record that this is the truth. The Constitution of the United States came from the Haudenosaunee people. This nation was founded on Indian principles.
Time to giggle.
I don't hear very well anymore, but that's my own fault. I had firecrackers blow off in my ear on 4th of July a couple years ago. Pretty stupid. Not in my ear. Wasn't. Just realized what that sounded like. Okay.
Hey, light it. See what happens. You never know till you try. Come on. Let's see what happens.
It wasn't quite that stupid. It was pretty close to that stupid. I don't know why I'm defending.
I'm not that dumb. It blew up here, not in there. You imagine firecracker blowing off in your ear? No, this is like an inch away from my ear.
The hell. Anyway. I was gonna throw a firecracker, true story. I looked at it and I was like, well, that's silly to just throw one at a time. They bundle them all together, get the whole thing moving. Good lesson for the kids. Watch what daddy's attempting. I told my friend, I said, you light them, and when they're lit, yell, now, and I'll throw them. So I was like this, and I hear, okay. I didn't hear now, and I didn't hear anything for about 6 months. Except the phone ringing every now and then. Somebody gonna get that? Somebody gonna get that? Why does Daddy say that all the time now? Somebody gonna get that? Is someone gonna get that?
We're sorry. Due to telephone company facility trouble, your call cannot be completed at this time. Will you try your call again later?
Last week, I introduced legislation, H.R. 5993, that would prohibit the president from providing military or paramilitary aid of any sort to any faction in the internal fighting in Syria. Unfortunately, it appears that the administration is already very much involved in supporting the overthrow of the Assad government. There's nary a whimper of criticism in Congress over our growing involvement in the civil war in Syria. The only noise we hear from Congress and repeated in the media is the complaint that we're not doing enough and that immediate direct U.S. military action must be taken. Tragically, our political leaders show both bad judgment and short memories when it comes to the downside of our foreign policy of mischief and intervention. Our compulsion to engage ourselves in every conflict around the world is dangerous to our national security. In dealing with Syria, the administration pretends to pursue diplomacy and provide humanitarian assistance to the people. In reality, the U.S. government facilitates weapons transfers to the rebels who are demanding immediate regime change. My goal is to stop our dangerous participation in the violence in Syria, yet evidence mounts that we're already deeply involved with no expectation that the administration will back away from military engagement. Recent reports indicate that the U.S. is providing logistics and communication assistance to the rebel forces. Assistance in getting arms to the rebels through surrogates is hardly a secret. Cooperating with the rebels' propaganda efforts has been reported and is used to prepare the American people for our coming involvement. There's every reason to expect that the well-laid plans to once again coordinate a favorable regime change will end badly. Even the strongest supporters of our direct and immediate military involvement in Syria admit the rebel forces are made up of many groups, including al-Qaeda, and no one is sure to whom the assistance should be given. All they claim is the need for the immediate removal of Assad. This policy is nothing new, and too often in our recent history, our assistance with dollars and weapons used to overthrow a government ends up with the weapons being used instead against us.
The fallout between Syria and Turkey continues after last week's downing of a Turkish military jet, as Turkey's now deploying anti-aircraft guns along the Syrian border. Well, on Tuesday, the Prime Minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, told Parliament Syria is a clear threat, in his words, to the country. Turkey has warned Damascus it will not tolerate any violation of the border by Syrian forces. Jonathan Head is in Istanbul. I spoke to him a short while ago about the scale of that deployment and what perhaps it signifies.
Well, it's visible, and it's the kind of weapons they're deploying are the sort that would support any engagement with Syrian troops. I mean, they're sending tanks. A number of troops have gone down as well. We know they've been deployed all along the border area in Hatay, where refugees have come across, and where we have seen Syrian troops very, very close to the border. They've also backed them up with anti-aircraft guns and Stinger missile launchers, which would be could be used against any helicopter gunships, for example, around there. Now, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but clearly the new rules of engagement announced by the Prime Minister do state that anything perceived as threatening, any Syrian forces approaching the border in any kind of numbers, would automatically be viewed as hostile and could be targeted. So it certainly raises the possibility of a clash between Syrian and Turkish troops. It's not just in Hatay, they've also deployed forces further along the border too, further to the east, where there have also been a lot of refugees coming across. I think it really just follows what the Turkish Prime Minister said at this stage, and it's not an enormous deployment. It looks preparatory and possibly defensive, but it is different from what we've seen before.
Well, that deployment coming as many of the parties to the peace process being put forward by Kofi Annan are to gather in Geneva this weekend to see if they can salvage something from it. The idea at the moment, of course, being for possibly a national unity government.
عدد كلام الهوى وحشتني من كل يوم 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 من كل يوم تعال نخلي الحلم حقيقة تعال 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 نعوض كل دقيقة تعال 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 نخلي الحلم حقيقة 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 يابا.
Now to an image from Egypt today and words that have ignited anger back here at home. Mohamed Morsi took the oath of office as Egypt's first freely elected president, but remarks he made in the last 24 hours causing alarm here in the U.S. Morsi pledged to work for the release of a blind sheikh who is serving a life sentence in the U.S. for plotting the first attack on the World Trade Center.
ورجعت ليك ورجعت ليك وقلت ليك وحشتني مالي لالي لالي ما فارقتش يوم عن بالي لالي 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 لالي
A soldier at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, opened fire on a senior officer at the base Thursday, killing him and wounding another soldier. The gunman then turned the weapon on himself. Fort Bragg officials say he survived, but they have no motive yet as to what led to the shooting. The incident took place during a safety briefing at Fort Bragg, which is home to the Army's elite airborne and special operations forces. The dead officer is reportedly a battalion commander.
There's been a record increase in the use of antidepressants and other prescribed pills among U.S. soldiers. Well, it's seen as a way to help service personnel survive the brutality of war. There's concern it's merely a sticking plaster for the deep psychological damage suffered by soldiers. RT's Ganesh Chakan has the story.
A record number of American troops are on antidepressants. According to the U.S. Army Surgeon General, more than 110,000 active duty service men and women are taking prescribed narcotics, sedatives, and anti-anxiety drugs. That's an eightfold increase since 2005. Michael Brown served as a Marine in Iraq up until 2006. He started taking antidepressants after he returned from war.
When I was on the antidepressants, I couldn't make a rational thought. My brain was so cluttered with all this other garbage that was going on. My mind was wandering to three different points during the middle of a sentence. So, I wouldn't be able to make a decision on whether or not the person that's carrying the weapon in front of me was pointing it at me, or whether or not they were just carrying the weapon for protection.
Michael says while in Iraq, he could see about a third of his fellow servicemen taking psychotropic pills to get through the day. Some suggest the current increase in suicides and homicides in the U.S. military is not a coincidence.
Around, excuse me, 34 million people in the world who are infected with HIV/AIDS. Of those, around a million will die this year as a result of the illness. Those fortunate enough to be given or to be able to afford treatment usually take a cocktail of antiretroviral drugs, lots of pills, in other words. However, a new single-pill drug for HIV treatment has been developed after extensive clinical trials in the US. It's called Quad. And joining me from Birmingham is Dr. Steve Taylor, who's an HIV specialist at Birmingham's Heartland Hospital. He's also the medical director of the Trust Saving Lives, which encourages testing for HIV. And Steve Taylor, I am aware that we've had this story before, a single pill which appeared to be solving the problem of the cocktail needed to treat HIV/AIDS. Are you sure that, unlike those which proved to be problematic, this new pill is different? It really does work.
Now to women stepping out of the shadows, revealing how far they'll go to have it all. Mothers and wives juggling all the demands of work and home with a pill that's being called Mother's New Little Helper. It has been exploding in popularity among women in their 20s and 30s. In just 8 years, the number of prescriptions is up 750%. But as ABC's Dan Harris reports, using that pill may carry a high price.
They are moms in the shadows all over America, drowning in their daily responsibilities.
I'm a single mom of three.
Very active and happy to juggle workload and children.
We received a wave of anonymous voicemails and emails from a hidden underworld of mothers who have found what they say is a secret way to do it all.
With the help of Adderall, mom,
and I do have to take Adderall.
Adderall. And these women don't have ADHD. They say they need Adderall simply to be better mothers.
In every dingy basement, on every dingy screen, every dragon hang back over every dragon bee. That's just the beat of time, the beat that must go on. You've been trying for years, we already heard your song. That's no glory, becomes just another story. That's no glory, just another story.
teenager in South Florida is recovering after being shot in the head with a spear. 16-year-old Yasser Lopez was spearfishing with a friend when the harpoon accidentally went off, sending the weapon into his head and knocking him into the water. X-rays of his injuries show the spear entering just above his right eye and penetrating his brain to the back of his skull. The teenager was airlifted to a hospital where doctors spent 3 hours removing the spear with the aid of a high-speed drill. Miraculously, no vital brain structures were damaged by the weapon.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever!
Earlier this week, police in South Carolina pulled the body of missing mom Sharon Mockler out of a marsh after her husband confessed to her murder. The news caught the attention of our own Shelby Cross, who for years now has campaigned for America's marshes and bogs to be eliminated. Shelby joins us now live in the Fact Zone studio, and with us live via satellite is Jason Popkin of the Wetlands Fund. Welcome to you both. So Shelby, let's start with you. You say that our bogs and marshes should actually be paved over.
That's right, absolutely, Brooke. These things are nothing but dead body dumping pits that make life easy for murderers. And it's disgusting to me that sickos like Mr. Popkin actually want to protect these things.
All right, well, Mr. Popkin, how do you respond to this?
Bogs and marshes are important ecosystems that should be protected. They're already being endangered.
Whoa, excuse me. As long as these human landfills remain open for business, what we're essentially saying to the criminal element is, sure, do whatever you like and throw the evidence here in this federally protected black hole.
Shelby, America's wetlands are home to thousands of endangered species.
Oh.
I understand that you don't like some of the activity that may...
And how would you like to be stuffed in a steamer trunk and dropped into a bog? Huh, Jason, would you like that? Have your face gnawed off by some filthy catfish? Would you like it? Would you like that?
No.
Do not interrupt me, sir. Look, I could maybe understand having a soft spot in your heart for marshes. I mean, it's a type of wetland that experiences continuous shallow flooding. Okay. I mean, I don't approve of it, but at least I can see where it comes from. But bogs? A mire filled with decayed plant matter?
Okay, Shelby.
Now, look, I testified before Senator Chuck Grassley, who wanted to lift federal protection on these lands, and what I told him is exactly what I'm going to tell you now.
And where is Chuck Grassley right now, sir? Where is Chuck Grassley now? Right now? Sir?
Probably in Washington.
So, but you can't say for sure. Is that what you're telling me? Could it be that he's sitting at the bottom of a bog somewhere? Why else would you be so hot on these wetlands if you aren't a murderer yourself?
Anyway, I'm going to dodge the rest of your question.
New tonight, SWAT teams destroyed her home, searching for a suspect who wasn't there. Now Melinda De La Torre's home is boarded up. The damage isn't fixed, and she wants to know why she has to pay for it.
Police are thieves in the street. Fight of the nation with their guns and ammunition. Police are thieves.
And he's headed to prison after stealing from fallen officers' families.
He's now admitted to doing it, stealing from a fund money meant to go to the families of the four fallen Lakewood police officers. I'm Matt Lorch.
And I'm Marnie Hughes. Now that Lakewood police officer is heading to jail, Skeeter Manos was convicted of taking money from a fund to help the families of those four officers. Hannah Kim was at the sentencing today.
We're outside the coffee shop where the... We're outside the coffee shop where the shootings happened. There is now a memorial set up here for the four slain officers. If you take a look, Skeeter Manos at the time was the treasurer of the Lakewood Police Independent Guild and was in charge of the donations pouring in for the officers' families. Today, Manos blamed PTSD for stealing, and that claim infuriated some of the officers of the Lakewood Police Department. After given a nearly 3-year prison sentence, the fired Lakewood police officer Skeeter Manos dodged our questions as he walked out of federal court.
Are you sorry?
say at all. Manos never made eye contact with any of the Lakewood police officers in court today, but he apologized for stealing from the fund set up for the families of the four officers killed in 2009.
Mexican authorities have identified two policemen as the men who shot dead three other police officers at Mexico City's International Airport this week. They claim that the gunmen, along with another officer who disappeared with them, were part of a trafficking ring that flew in cocaine from Peru. The shooting broke out in a crowded food court at the airport on Monday.
You're going to love this country, the land of freedom and opportunity, and air conditioning. Huh? You like that? That's the cool breeze of freedom right there.
Police and thieves in the street. Oh yeah! Fight of the nation with their guns and ammunition. Police and thieves in the street. Oh yeah! Scared of the nation.
To police, a sucker punch at a bar in Andover last night sent him to the hospital.
Yeah, and this afternoon, the man who turned himself into the Anoka County Jail for the crime is the Minneapolis police sergeant. Fox 9's Leah Bino talked exclusively with a longtime friend of the victim who saw it happen last night. First of all, Leah, how's this guy doing?
Well, tonight he's on life support. He's had two brain surgeries in the last 24 hours because of bleeding on his brain. But doctors are hopeful because his vitals are good, so that's a very good sign. While his family and friends are dealing with all of that, they're still trying to wrap their heads around the fact that a Minneapolis cop who's been on the job for the past 10 years is in jail because of all of this.
Well, everybody's taking it hard. It's tough.
Brian Vanderly is fighting for his life with his wife and four young daughters by his side. His friend since the seventh grade is trying to be as strong as possible. Mike Archambeau last spoke to him on his cell phone as he was pulling into Tanner's parking lot in Andover. He was going to meet Vanderly, his wife, and brother for a drink on the patio.
He says, well, where are you at? Get in here. And I said, I'm in the parking lot, you big dummy. I said, I'll be right in. And he said a couple things to me, and then the phone went dead. Phone conversation just dropped.
One punch during that call left Vanderly unconscious after his head hit the concrete.
Guy in a black shirt come running out of the patio area of Tanner's. So a couple guys went chasing after him.
Investigators spent the night searching for the suspect. They quickly learned they were looking for a Minneapolis police sergeant, David Clifford.
All the crimes committed, day by day, no one tried to stop it.
Stories cross country. First in Arizona, police blame a naked carjacking suspect for multiple wrecks. They say the rampage started when he got in a crash yesterday.
He jumped out of his car and started yelling before pulling off his clothes. He then climbed on the roof of the car, pulled out the driver, jumped in and fled, and then crashed into four more cars before police stopped him. One of those injured was a pregnant woman. Police say the suspect may have been on drugs. Certainly looks that way.
Could be a crackhead that got hold to the wrong stuff, and it told him to get up in a tree and play a leprechaun.
Police and thieves in the street. Oh yeah! Fighting the nation with their guns and ammunition. Police and thieves in the street. Oh yeah! Scaring the nation with their guns and ammunition. Police and thieves. Police and thieves. Police and thieves. Police and thieves. Oh, yeah.
If you could go to Mars and never come home, would you? And if you could appear on Big Brother, would you? Mars One is a company determined to establish a human colony on Mars. By 2023, they want to have a rover-built settlement ready for four humans to move into on the Red Planet, propelled there using existing or planned SpaceX craft. The money for the trip would be made by selling media rights, billions of dollars, to livestream the training, landing and life on Mars, creating the biggest reality series ever. Although new crews would arrive every 2 years, the trip would be one way. The colonists would never come home.
All true exploration is risky, and it asks sacrifice from the people who are doing it. And this is not just a trip, it's the next giant leap for mankind, literally, I think. And it's something that will come with a lot of risk, but it will also come with a lot of reward.
And that raises the question, should the perils of exploring space be a source of entertainment, or should people have the right to see humanity move to the stars?
And the RS-68A engines roar to life and lift off.
A classified mission begins.
Carrying the NRO.
The US Air Force launches a new spy satellite aboard an unmanned Delta IV rocket. Details on the capabilities of the satellite are being kept secret. So all we know is that the launch went without a hitch in Florida.
A mother in North Carolina is shocked that her third grade child received a strip search at school. And to make matters worse, she wasn't even informed that it happened until she heard it from her son himself. Clarinda Cox came home from work to find her 10-year-old son, Justin, upset. He'd been accused of stealing another student's money. His elementary school's assistant principal confronted Justin, making him take off everything but his undershirt and boxer shorts for a search.
And then she came up to him and rubbed her fingers around inside of his underwear.
Really?
Now if that isn't excessively intrusive, I don't know what is.
A school district spokeswoman says there was a male janitor brought in as a witness and that the assistant principal was within her legal right.
Have the right not to be killed.
With China's poor human rights reputation, deserved or not, it takes a brave soul to try and take President Hu Jintao to task. But that's what Hong Kong resident Ken Sang did, standing up to decry China's lack of democracy on the 15th anniversary of the island's handover from Britain. Ken entered the conference hall legitimately as a representative of the social welfare sector. However, he was quickly escorted out by security as the crowd did their best to ignore the scuffle. Outside, Ken said he wanted to make a stand against single-party rule in China. You have the right to food money. Providing, of course, you don't mind a little investigation, humiliation. And if you cross your fingers, rehabilitation.
Isn't this exciting? 1 month to go, the biggest logistics project in British peacetime history, the biggest construction project anywhere in Europe, and a Games that is looking really good. It's on time, it's on budget, all the buildings being done, but what this is about today, it's not about politics. This is about Britain, it's about our country, it's about volunteering, and it's about a successful Olympics. Are we going to put on a successful Olympics?
Number three. You have the right to free speech. As long as you're not dumb enough to actually try it.
Right up one right quick. Pull that from the big dollar. power. The heart of democracy now has more people in prison per capita than any other nation in the world. And we are told this is the land of the free.
Right.
Corporations and the banking institutions have been able not just to influence, but completely hijack our government. We have been stripped of our liberties, we have been stripped of our property, we have been robbed of our freedom. Now, a growing number of people around the world are waking up to the realization that we simply have nothing left to lose. All over the world, the people are standing up and shrugging off the authority of their oppressors. We are bearing witness to the single greatest social correction the world has ever known. And it's all about damn time. All throughout history, we have been told of the elitist duty and the social correction of massive
opinion.
Technological advancement. We must, for the sake of our own perpetuity, get it right.
She has a right to speak. Why are you doing this? Why are you selling your country? We have a constitution. He has a right to speak.
This idea that we create our own reality by resonating the energy around us by what we think and what we feel has now been scientifically shown to be provable. So this process of drawing to us what we put out means that we have to face what we're putting out so we can face it and evolve. So when we fear something, we draw what we fear to us eventually. When we put out anger, we draw to us anger. When I was having my angry period in the 1970s particularly, my life was a series of angry confrontations. I was working in the media and BBC and all that stuff, and wherever I went, I was attracting angry people all the time. Even if I was in an apparently consciously calm state, my subconscious anger is still going out there and it's still pulling in angry people. Someone comes into a bar in that period and they'd had a bad day, they found me every time. And then I realized, and I started to ask a few questions, what's the common denominator of all these angry confrontations? Oh yes, it's you. So what goes on? What's causing them? Why? Started to realize, because I was angry, I was attracting anger. There was a lovely song that I came across by an American group which said, if you hold anger, guess what comes to you? A lot of very angry people do. And I certainly know that to be true. When I've observed my own life and the lives of others, it's very obvious that what they're putting out in their state of being is creating their physical life. And there's nothing more debilitating, more controlling and limiting than the victim mentality. We're encouraged by this manipulation throughout our lives to see ourselves as victims, to blame someone else. Oh, I'm a victim, I'm in this situation because of A, B, C, D, and on it goes. And when we're in that state, we're going to stay in that state, because when you think you're a victim, the victim vibe goes out, the victim circumstance goes in. When you say, hey, I'm not a victim, I'm in control of my life, I've created these circumstances I don't like, therefore I can create circumstances I do. At that point, the victim mentality is gone. Victim circumstances stop being attracted, and suddenly people come into your life who are just the people you need to get you out of the circumstances you don't like. And if you don't realize what's happening, and most of us don't at the time, we say, oh my poor mate, I was so lucky. This fella came into my life at just the right time, this person, I couldn't believe it. Amazing luck. No. You pulled them in because your state of being had changed and you synced with what you needed to get out of that situation. We are so in control of our destiny, it's unbelievable. And yet billions are persuaded they're not, and therefore they create a very different reality. So if we're in fear, we can attract a reflection of fear. But when we emit love, we create a very different energy. Therefore we create a very different reality. Just a choice. Everything is just a choice. I keep hearing people say, I had no choice, mate. I had to do it. We never have no choice. We have choices we'd like to make, choices we'd rather not make, but we never have no choice. It's a cop-out.
And some people find it very difficult to take this on because it's much easier in their own mind to blame someone for what happens in our lives. Much more of a challenge to say, hey, I've created this. I'm responsible for it. But when you do, you stop creating what you don't like and you start creating what you do. And this love connection is the key to removing this manipulation and taking humanity onto another level of existence, another level of consciousness, which is what's happened to so many people in this period we're going through now.
Now, I want to talk about this idea of ideas being real things.
Yeah.
Now, when I have an idea, I quite often get the feeling that this is not my property, or this is just me tuning in on something rather than something that's inside of me. It feels like it's something outside of me, and some perceptual mechanism in me has identified some sort of structure.
Yeah, I think that's probably true, right? So if there's this whole spiritual world and it's composed of ideas and meaning and stuff, it's like when you have an idea, I mean, there is, when you have an idea, you're tuning into one of those beings that lives in that world, right? But since you're an individual, everybody's going to tune into it in a different way. It's going to be filtered through your individuality. So it will be partially yours because it's come through your lens, yeah. And partially not yours because it's this other thing entirely.
Now you use the term being.
Yeah.
So that's, he believes these ideas are alive.
Yeah, totally.
So
yeah,
these are living things.
Yeah.
These are and he called them angels, or
angels are a specific type of those beings. There are certain rules that they have that other ones don't have. But yeah,
that's so fascinating. So then that gets us into the realm of the invocation to the muse that artists do, or the idea of prayer, or
yeah.
The idea of trying to communicate with these beings to allow themselves to come through you unobstructed.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think it's also just, again, it's like tuning in. So like, there's this Buddhist thing where they're like, you're not your thoughts, right?
Yes.
And that really mind people, right? Because I might be able to say I'm not my body, but like to say I'm not my thoughts, like you, how am I supposed to, like, what am I,
yeah.
Right? But there is a you that, an I that notices the thoughts. So that, what are the thoughts then? That's the interesting question to me, if you're not them. And that is what I would say. Every human being is like a location where these beings gather. Like we're like their church or something. They enter into us and they all gather and talk, and that's what our thinking is. And our eye gets to sort of pick the ones and notice the ones that it wants at a certain time and then spit them out.
Wow. That means my brain is like a f-ing movie. A movie theater next to a high school or something. It's just filled with assholes yapping.
Yeah, other total assholes in there. And then that's part of our job is to find those assholes that are in us and give them love, and then they get to ascend into being something better.
So that's beautiful. That's great. I want to talk more about how to give the teenagers in the movie theater of our minds love to make them stop looking at their cell phones and flying to heaven. This idea of the negative thought forms, I don't know what the correct word for it is. I bet Steiner
That's
has
fine.
The right word for
yeah.
it. But the negative thought forms, the reoccurring thought patterns, loving them. Now,
right.
How the f*** do you love these things? How do you do it? How do you embrace these awful things that your mind's regurgitating?
You know, it's so weird because I can do it all right now, but for a really long time I couldn't. And I had this moment in my life where it sort of like flipped for me. The first thing is to notice, right? Because that's what drags us down to everything, is not to notice our thinking, not to notice our actions, to just do all kinds of crazy, awful stuff, think
yeah.
terrible things about people, say horrible things, and not even notice that we're doing it. And then, you know, when you begin to notice, it gives you a chance to just stop for 1 second, and then I would just be like, yeah, I see you, and you know what, like, you're here for me, thank you, and that's it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just even just saying thanks, you know, instead of being like, f*** you, why am I thinking this thought, because that's like, that's the weird reinforcer
yeah.
of all those horrible things, that why am I thinking this thought. It gives them this horrible energy.
Yes,
you know?
Sure does. Yeah, that's the that's definitely the juju behind those things. That definitely, it's like blowing up a balloon,
right?
But you know, but again, to get back to this idea of like loving yourself, or it's a It's the opposite of being a victim.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
GoFindTheOthers.com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.